From WILL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Thursday, June 17th. Coming up, a man who helped change the state of Illinois is retiring. A conversation with John Hanlon, director of the Illinois Innocence Project, is coming up in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. The Illinois House yesterday approved sweeping gun legislation, expanding mandated background checks to person-to-person gun sales. But as Hannah Meisel reports, it did not include mandatory fingerprinting for all gun owners.
In 2019, Gary Martin shot five coworkers and himself at a warehouse in Aurora. That was 5 years after Martin had his firearm owner identification, or FOID card, revoked after voluntarily submitted fingerprints connected him to a felony aggravated assault conviction from 20 years earlier. Suburban Democrats like freshman Representative Maura Hershauer of Batavia fought to mandate fingerprinting for all Illinois gun owners. But on Wednesday, she ended up voting for an alternative proposal, which includes expanded background checks and funding for mental health services.
I still believe that a mandatory fingerprint is the most comprehensive public health policy we can give the people of Illinois. I still believe that, even though I voted yes on this bill.
Gun safety organizations say they'll try again to mandate fingerprints in the future. I'm Hannah Meisel.
Illinois' budget, beginning July 1st, will include automatic cost of living adjustments for state lawmakers, and a class action lawsuit filed by a former Republican House member could open the door to the state having to dole out 10 years in back pay. Judges have previously ruled in favor of individual lawmakers, saying the legislature's longtime practice of denying themselves the automatic pay raises is actually unconstitutional. Legislators are not allowed to change their rate of pay, either up or down, during the two-year term they're elected to. Republican State Representative Tom Demmer of Dixon says the legislature has the ability to end this practice once and for all.
We don't have to let the courts decide on some arcane interpretation of, you know, how these previous actions have been handled. We can make a decision today and say no more to legislative pay increases, period.
Governor J.B. Pritzker used his power of a mandatory veto to fix major errors in the state budget Democrats passed last month, which would have prevented the state from spending money on a host of items until June of next year. Republicans blasted Pritzker for not using that same power to block legislator pay raises. Juneteenth is this Saturday and celebrates the end of slavery in the United States. In Champaign County, organizers are preparing Juneteenth events to celebrate African-American culture and remind people of issues affecting the community today. Illinois Newsroom student journalist Vivian Law has more.
Rantoul resident Deborah Sweat says she was inspired to organize her town's first Juneteenth celebration after a year of nationwide protests and police brutality. The event will take place on Saturday at Wabash Park in Rantoul with activities for all ages. Sweat says her community is divided, and she hopes Saturday's Juneteenth event will be the first of many to bring it together.
We can be inclusive and understanding. It can lead to a reconciliation of our present, and then hopefully draw a new roadmap for the future.
In Champaign, HV Neighborhood Transformation is hosting a Juneteenth celebration at Westside Park. Saturday's event is also the first day of the group's peace campaign to bring awareness to gun violence in the community. Founder William Brown says it takes communities coming together to start fixing systemic problems, and Juneteenth is one way to do so. I'm Vivian Law, Illinois Newsroom.
For more information on Juneteenth events in Champaign County, visit illinoisnewsroom.org. In a story we reported yesterday, we incorrectly stated the percentage of Black and Hispanic residents in Champaign County who are fully vaccinated. As of Wednesday, about a quarter of Black residents and a third of Hispanic residents in Champaign County are fully vaccinated, compared to about 44% of white residents. That's according to data from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Still to come, we'll hear from the outgoing director of the Illinois Innocence Project. John Hanlon is retiring. His conversation with Edith Brady Lunny is next on 217 Today.
Healthcare has never been more important as the coronavirus pandemic continues to touch every aspect of our lives. I'm Christine Herman, health reporter for Illinois Newsroom, working to make sense of what's going on with rich storytelling and helpful analysis for listeners across the state. Hear what I uncover next on AM 580 and FM 90.9, or look for my stories online at illinoisnewsroom.org.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. A man who helped change the state of Illinois is retiring. John Hanlon directs the Illinois Innocence Project at the University of Illinois at Springfield. His work has led to the release of 18 people from prison, some after decades, and some who were on death row before Illinois abolished capital punishment. In this interview with Edith Brady Lunny, Hanlon says he began work as a defense attorney in 1983 when the criminal justice system worked very differently than it does today.
What started the ball rolling is DNA. DNA opened eyes that mistakes were made in the criminal justice system. You know, obviously DNA technology and analysis existed for different reasons, but, you know, there was no forensic application of DNA until the late 1980s, at least not in this state. A guy named Gary Dotson was the first case in Illinois where there was the attempt to say, hey, let's try to figure out the truth about this case. Gary Dotson was serving a sentence for a sexual assault, and the woman expressed some doubt about whether or not she had gotten the right guy. You know, took a lot of strength on her part, no doubt. And the DNA work was done per Governor Thompson's order. And sure enough, Dotson was innocent.
Do you think that the discovery and the use of the DNA, has that helped change the public perception too, do you think, around wrongful convictions? Has helped the public understand the reality that there really are people who are innocent and serving time in jail?
Absolutely. DNA enables, you know, there's this database of almost 3,000 people who were wrongfully convicted and since then freed, fully exonerated. And what is, you know, it's hard to look at all those names and realize, you know, those are human beings. Those are lives that were lost for, in many cases, so many dozens of years. But the database is great because it enables us to look back. And then we realize, oh, okay, this guy was in for 17 years before he was exonerated. And now we can look back and say, well, what was in his case? Oh, there was an eyewitness. Oh, there was an allegation of police misconduct. Oh, there was a confession. So yes, it really it provides the ability to reflect on all different kinds of evidence.
When we think about the wrongful convictions in Illinois, I think one of the cases that stands out vividly is the Rolando Cruz case that you worked on, I think, at the appellate level. How did your work on that case affect you in terms of going forward with your career and the work that you did after that?
So when I went to work for the appellate defender doing criminal appellate work, I was pretty naive. As I said, I thought a confession, guilty, and all those other areas of evidence meant guilty. How wrong that proved to be. I wasn't even sure I wanted to be a criminal lawyer. But once all this stuff started with the death penalty and the injustices and the wrongful convictions that were occurring in death penalty cases, which I ultimately did exclusively, then I was hooked. I mean, it's like there's no other career that I could have that would be as fulfilling. Maybe more lucrative, but not as fulfilling, not as important. My then boss walked into my office one day in 1985 and said, hey, how'd you like to work on a death penalty case? I was doing non-death penalty criminal cases at that time. How'd you like to do a death penalty case? And I, again, naively said, sure. Little did I know that that case, which was Rolando Cruz's case, little did I know that that would really define my career. It was a death penalty case. He's at Menard Correctional on death row, which is just a horrifying place. I was there more times than I care to recall. You know, what I love about that thought, actually, but about the death row at Menard is this. It's gone. That building is gone. And Rolando, my former client, and others who were up there are still with us. And what I'm really the most proud of about that case is that Rolando has been out all those years now, 25 years, and he is a great father.
That's Illinois Innocence Project Director John Hanlon talking with Edith Brady Lunny. Find more of their conversation at IllinoisNewsroom.org. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says we'll see more heat and humidity today with sunny skies and a high of 90 degrees. That's all for today. 217 Today is produced by Carolina Garibay. Reporting today contributed by Hannah Meisel, Derek Cantu, Vivian Law, and Edith Brady Lunny. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.